All right, Alexander, let's talk about what's going on in Trump's cabinet and the recent departures of a few people. One of them is DeVos. I believe his name, DeVos. And Chow.
That's Chow, right.
Who's married to Mitch McConnell, coincidentally.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the lawyers in Pennsylvania, I forgot his name, wanted to remove himself from the case. And some other minor defections. You have some thoughts about this. What are those thoughts?
Yes, I mean, I have to say straight away, I mean, I heard all the reports about lots of people about to quit the White House. There was also all sorts of people who, there were also reports circulating that there was debates within the cabinet about invoking the 25th Amendment. This was reported by CBS News. And it's quite interesting because actually it seems to me that a mountain has moved, as we say in England, and produced a mouse. In other words, there was an awful lot of talk, but so far it really hasn't amounted to very much. The education secretary has left. The transportation secretary has left. Transportation secretary, Mrs. Chow, is indeed, as you rightly say, Mitch McConnell's wife. And I wonder, being of a suspicious mind, whether this was in fact an attempt by someone in the Republican leadership in Congress to try to destabilize the Trump administration by organizing a walkout. And that clearly hasn't succeeded because we see all the big names. They're still there. Pompeo is still there. He's, of course, the senior cabinet member. Steve Mnuchin is still there. The new people, the new staff at the Defense Department is still there. The Attorney General is still there. Or rather, the acting Attorney General, I should say.
McEnany, the Secretary.
Exactly. They're all still there. All the really important big names are still there. So predictions of a walkout, on a mass walkout, have failed to materialize. The sort of people that have walked out are people who the American people will not have heard of. And, I, you know, that sounds a bit tough, but that's basically how it looks to me. Maybe the education secretary is somebody they will have known a little bit more about than the others. But all of the others are very, very much people who are, I would say, definitely second tier people. For my other channel, I've also recently done a video which is coming out today on this discussion of removing Donald Trump as president using the 25th Amendment of the Constitution. And I discuss in detail there why I think that is not only an extraordinarily bad and dangerous idea, but I think also an impractical one. I also discuss impeachment, by the way, and I also explain why I think that's impractical too. But in any event, it seems increasingly as if the whole 25th Amendment idea of removing Trump is dead. It seems Pence, without whose involvement it can't happen, has ruled it out. I haven't actually seen that confirmed by Pence or by the White House, but there are media reports circulating to that effect, and they seem to me to be quite conclusive. So it looks as if that very bad and dangerous idea and misconceived idea has gone and failed. And the idea of trying to destabilize the administration by staging a massive walkout, which would have isolated Donald Trump and made him vulnerable to these kind of moves, has also failed. It seems to me that all of this pressure is coming, yes, obviously from the Democrats, but also from the leadership of the Republican Party. And it's quite clear to me that the intention is to prevent Donald Trump making a strong run for the presidency in 2024. I think this is really now what this is all about. They are still incredibly nervous of Trump. They're very afraid of his electoral base. I don't mean when I say that they're nervous that they think that he's going to do anything, you know, wild or, you know, reckless between now and the inauguration. He said that he will, you know, go ahead with the transition. But I think they are still tremendously nervous of the fact that Donald Trump retains massive support in the country. And I think they're very afraid that he will run in 2024. And all these maneuvers we've seen, the attempt to organize a walkout, the talk of the 25th Amendment, the talk about impeachment is now really about that.
Yeah, so the people that did leave, DeVos is like a multi-billionaire, and Chow is also, God knows how wealthy they are. These were the globalists that left.
Yes, exactly, of course.
Once again, I've been saying it now forever and ever and ever. Just really bad choices in his cabinet. Really bad choices.
Very, very bad choices, and they've all gone wrong. I mean, I think some of them, in fairness to him, are probably part of the deal making that inevitably happens when a president becomes president and has to form an administration. Donald Trump, if you remember, when he became president, he didn't have much support in Congress, and he tried to work with the Republican establishment by bringing some of their people into the administration. And the result is they came into the administration, and they've shown repeatedly and continuously that they are not loyal to him. They're not loyal to his administration. They're loyal to the globalist agenda that they are absolutely signed up to. And I'm sure that's exactly describes the people who are currently walking out. By the way, despite certain, you know, views that Kelly Loeffler has expressed. This is the person who, the Republican who lost the runoff in Georgia. I'm not going to say necessarily that she's a globalist, but if you look at her financial background, that is certainly the impression she will have given to many people. She was selected as a candidate for that Senate seat by Brian Kemp. She was not wanted by Donald Trump. She was not popular in Georgia, and that's why she lost. So, I mean, it's the Republican Party bringing in these sort of people, bringing them into the cabinet, trying to find Senate and congressional seats for them, in a sense, losing increasingly touch with its own base, and increasingly nervous that the base is becoming loyal to Donald Trump and not to them. And that is the battle that is now being fought out.
Well, I mean, we said it yesterday on our live. It's not so, yes, they want it. They want that base because Trump has definitely widened the tent. I mean, you have a lot more people now voting Republican than you may have had, you know, 20 years ago, because I think the definition of what a Republican has changed. It's not a Republican now is not, you know, some CEO of a company or a very wealthy conservative. A Republican now is a patriot in a sense. It's someone who loves the United States of America. But you know, in this class warfare that we're going through, I think both the Republicans and the Democrats are kind of vying for the same voter. I mean, they want the same type of person, which is a Kelly Loeffler type of person, someone who's super wealthy, and she's super wealthy, someone in the top 1%. It's really strange that the Democrats don't want the working class anymore.
No.
The Republicans have the working class because of Trump, but it seems that they despise them and they don't want them. But at the same time, you know, you have both parties kind of saying, well, you know, we need someone to vote for us. So the Democrats are saying, well, we need someone to vote for us. So I guess we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to deal with progressives, and we're going to have to deal with, you know, people on the left, really on the left. So they're saying, okay, fine, we'll have to deal with these people, even though we want the uber rich Silicon Valley type. And the Republicans are kind of saying, well, we want the Kelly Loeffler types. We want the Koch brother types. We want these guys, but we're going to have to deal with the, you know, everyday, you know, working, you know, everyday people of everyday Americans who, you know, believe in the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, And you know, they're just, you know, working an honest day's work, but they don't want that. They both want the same type of person.
Exactly right. This is exactly the problem they both have. Both of the parties have lost touch with their original base. The Democrats have a certain advantage here because obviously they can use the identity issues to mobilize certain people. We've seen that. They also can do what Democrats have been doing since the 19th century, which is mobilize immigrant votes, which is one reason, by the way, why they're so keen to relax immigration rules. That is part of their program, and it does give them a lot of votes. Doesn't give them enough, but it gives them a lot, and it explains why the Democrats managed to be, in the normal course, more of a mass party than the Republicans are. But the leadership of both of these parties has become profoundly elitist and very invested in maintaining the economic and social status quo. And that means that vast numbers of people who self-identify as Democrats because they consider themselves to be on the left, and many of whom, by the way, once belonged to the working class base that used to be the key base which supported the Democratic Party when it was led by people like Franklin Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, people like that. Those sort of people, the current Democratic Party leadership has no real time for, no understanding of, and mistrusts. And the Republican Party, which has also been losing contact with its own base, was handed by Donald Trump a massive working class electoral base it doesn't like and doesn't understand and doesn't know what to do with. So they both look at this extraordinary figure of Donald Trump who talks to that base, and they say to themselves, my God, what are we going to do? He's able to talk their language. He understands them. He's able to bring them to the polling stations. He's able to get them to vote in numbers that we cannot. So what do we do to stop him? And what we've seen, and this is now, it seems to me, the major agenda, is to try to stop him coming back in 2024, because realistically, neither party understands or has any real time for its own traditional base. It's most bizarre because the United States, the absolute first lesson of US politics, I remember learning about this when I studied US politics so many years ago at university, was that the American political system, the American political parties, were always extremely concerned about keeping the support of their base. They're not concerned about it anymore. And it's so much now about the business of politics, the way politics in the United States, at least within the Beltway, has come to revolve around lobbyists and donors and that sort of thing. So that it's become essentially a sport for very wealthy people who use it as a mechanism to make themselves and their friends wealthier still.
Yeah, it's big business, that's for sure. Politics in the US is massive business. But okay, 3 points and we'll wrap up the video. They're not concerned with their base in the US because the progression of where they want to take things, I think, is very much like what we have in the EU, which is a globalist worldview. In other words, they're going to sit in Brussels. In this case, it'll be DC. They're not going to have any contact with their base. They're not even going to know what the people's culture is, like very much the EU. I doubt Ursula von der Leyen knows anything about what it's like to be Italian or Spanish or Greek. That's for damn sure. So, they're gonna create such a chasm, such a distance. And that's what they want. They just want to sit in their ivory towers and just rule from afar, very much like the EU does. So I think the U.S., the Pelosi's and the Schumer's, the McConnell's, they want to create some sort of system like what we have in the European Union. That's just my thought. Yes. You know, to be as far away from the actual people as you can, but, you know, still control the money supply, still control the policy, put up the regulations, all that. So that's point number one. Do you want to address each point or do you want me to just give the 3 points?
No, give.
Point number two is real quick. I mean, don't you think that the progression now for the Democrats is actually, okay, so, you know, they rely on the migrant vote or they rely on the African-American or Black vote or the Hispanic-American vote. But I think you've seen with Trump now, when those groups realize that they're getting played and they're getting conned by the Democrats, then they move to the MAGA side of things. Yeah. And now that you don't have a Republican, you know, America first anymore, you know, led by Trump, they're also going to say, you know what, we've progressed. We went to the Democrats. We saw the Democrats were just, you know, blowing smoke up our you know what. And now we went to the Trump side of things. And now they've taken Trump away. So, you know, now where do we go? In other words, I think even the Democrats who try to get the immigrants or the minorities into the Democrat Party, I think those minorities are also waking up. And then and they had the Republican Party to go to, but now they don't have that anymore. And finally, a very, very quick one is, do you think they're going to go to arrest Trump? I mean, go hard at Trump and his family, which a lot of people are asking.
Very good question. Now, let's take it step by step. Firstly, I think that is exactly what you talked about, the parallels between the European Union and what these people want. I think that's exactly right. The European Union describes itself as this great democratic experiment in Europe. But what is it in reality? It is an unaccountable technocracy in Brussels, not elected, remember. There's no mechanism to remove Ursula von Leyen and her officials through election. They're not elected by anybody. They're chosen. It's a very different thing. They're chosen. They're not elected. So they operate. They do massive amount of legislation because, of course, European Union legislation basically comes out of the technocracy in Brussels. It's not voted on. The European Parliament rubber stamps, but it's not there to really initiate legislation on its own. And you have a court, the European Court of Justice, which again is not really accountable, not accountable in the way that the Supreme Court of the United States is. You don't select judges to the European Court of Justice and then put them through a confirmation process in the way that you put Supreme Court justices through a confirmation process. So it is in effect a kind of technocracy. It may talk a democratic language, but it doesn't really practice it in that kind of way. And it seems to me that this is, for many people now, the model that they would like to follow in the United States and in other places. I forgot to mention, of course, quickly, that it's also the case with the European Central Bank. It's not directly responsible to any political authority. It's not supervised by any government or Treasury Department. Its top officials are not confirmed in the way that they would be in the United States. And so, again, they're able to exercise extraordinary power. And of course, if you've lived in Greece, you will remember how they're able to cut off the banking system at the press of a switch. And that's what they do. So that is a model that has emerged in Europe. And one does get the sense that there are more and more people in the United States who would like to see that sort of model replicated in the United States itself. There is a fundamental difference, though, which is that the European Union is a very artificial construct created by treaty between various states. The United States is, along with many other things, a nation which grew out of the American Revolution and has that democratic and constitutional tradition in its DNA. Trying to impose that system on the United States, I predict, is going to be extremely difficult and it is going to run into massive problems. So that's the first thing. I think you're right that that is the optimal point of destination that these people have for the United States, something that looks very like the European Union, where you have a European Parliament, which is, as I said, very much part of the elite structure, but where really decisions are not taken in any kind of politically active way. But it's a destination which I think they would like, but which I don't think they are ever going to arrive at. But they will create huge turbulence along the way. Now, on your second point, which is about these identity politics type issues, the key thing to understand is that people are people. They are not pawns or cards that are moved around in a game. And it's all very well for the Democratic Party or the people who lead the Democratic Party to think that they can use and manipulate votes of Black people and Hispanic people and immigrants generally. But if they don't deliver for them, which they don't increasingly, by the way, then why should those people, once they are in the United States, go on supporting them? It's not like the old Democratic Party of the late 19th century or early 20th century, where institutions like Tammany Hall in New York, for example, were extraordinarily corrupt, but they actually did things for, you know, through the patronage system for immigrant communities, which they looked to for support, and which as a result gained an actual practical benefit from the system. And of course, if you look at those kind of Democratic Party politicians that existed at that time, they were, of course, drawn from those communities themselves. A globalist type Democratic Party almost by definition has less and less appeal to these sort of communities, and they will start increasingly to drift away from the Democratic Party, as they clearly did in the recent election, and I predict will continue to do in certain strongholds like Milwaukee. The grip of the Democratic Party is still very strong, but over time it will weaken when people who live there will start to say, well, why should we continue to vote for you when you give us back nothing? And we're already seeing that happen. So manipulative approaches to politics can work for a while, but they cannot go on working forever. And what you start to see is that more and more of these people will peel away. I predict that this is the last election cycle in which a political leader like Obama is going to be able to mobilize the entire Black American Democratic Party vote behind his chosen heir, Joe Biden, and deliver to Joe Biden in that way the nomination, the Democratic Party's nomination for the presidency. I predict this is the last occasion when it's going to be possible to do that. I think that is crumbling. And that comes back to our first point. They're trying to build this structure on very unsteady foundations. Foundations which are going to become ever more unsteady because they fly so completely contrary to the promise of America that most Americans still believe in and hold dear. Now, the last thing is, I predicted...
Can I interrupt you before you get to the last thing? I'm sorry. Before you get to the last thing, which is a little separate, I have to ask you, that's, I think, a major point to why they're trying so hard to erase America, you know, take down the statue, for example, or change the names of certain schools or military bases, correct?
Absolutely. That is entirely correct, because, of course, the America that has existed and which is part of, if you like, you know, the idea of America is something that is utterly contrary to the kind of structure that they're trying to create. But it's, you can't just destroy people's image of their own country in that way. I mean, it's been tried, as I said, you know, just tried to some extent. Tried to some extent in the Soviet Union. It was tried under Mao in China. But what you discover is it doesn't really work. People invariably, the pendulum invariably swings back. And in fact, people turn against you if you try to do this. But that leads to your third point. I predict all-out war against Donald Trump and his family from now on, because precisely because he embodies now for the elite the resistance to these programs, they will do everything they can to eliminate him. They may very well use the criminal law. I understand that Pelosi wants to press ahead with impeachment next week, which seems to me an extremely misguided idea, to put it mildly. And I think that nonetheless, they will do everything they can between now and 2024 and beyond to destroy Trump and to destroy the political force that he represents. They may use the criminal law. Again, I still have problems understanding what crime is alleged against him. I really don't personally buy the incitement arguments that some people are making at all. I mean, I just don't see that in any conceivable way. I mean, I read all the things he said. Looked at all his speeches. I don't think that really stacks up, actually, at least not in a court of law. I can't see how it would. And of course, the tax things that people are investing so much on, again, that doesn't really make much sense to me. But we've seen that the judicial system in the United States has its own peculiar eccentricities. We've seen that in the Flynn case with the behavior of Judge Sullivan. We've seen the way in which people were pushed into making confessions to crimes, which they shouldn't have confessed to. So, you know, you never know. But of course, doing that, taking those kind of steps, will not just obviously erode even further the system in the United States, but it will also erode people's trust in that system. And I think it would be a very politically dangerous thing to do. But we will see. But they will certainly, I think, go for Trump in every conceivable way that they can.
It's also a sense of having a distraction, a very powerful distraction for the American people, the world, actually, because we see world leaders weighing in on this for the next 4 years or however long, you know, they can, you know, prop Biden up. Mm. The distraction that Trump provides is perfect for them, because then they could, you know, wage whatever conflicts they need to wage, whatever regime changes they need to change, whatever color revolutions they need to color. I mean, they could do all these things as well as the everyday normal, moving around the funds and kleptocracy and all the other stuff that's, you know, just everyday stuff now. They can do all these things as long as they have everyone saying, look here, and just don't look over there at what we're doing. Don't look at this, you know, false flag in Syria, which I'm just counting down the days for that to happen.
Absolutely.
Don't mind this false flag, you know, orange man bad, and he's going to remain bad.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, he will. And you'll have the whole media behind him. I mean, actually, I have to say, the vituperative nature of some of the articles that are now appearing in establishment Republican sites have astonished me over the last few days. But I predict, I'm sure you're right. It's the politics of, you know, keeping people focused on the bad orange man and ignoring everything else. And it will succeed with many people. It always does. The question is, will it be enough of them? And of course, there's always a danger involved in keeping Trump in the limelight, because of course that reminds many of the people who voted for him that he's still there. And that makes him a potent threat. It's a little bit like, you know, exiling Napoleon to Elba and saying all sorts of horrid things about him that reminded people that he was there. And of course, when he came back, the opposition to him found that he couldn't organize because he had a critical mass of support behind him. So there's dangers in doing it, but I think it's very plausible that they will, that that is what will happen. And I have to also say that I think it's also highly plausible that we are going to see a concerted attack on him using every instrument these people have at their disposal over the next few weeks, months, and years.
Well, big tech, mainstream media, of course, we're seeing that right now. I was watching a Carl Benjamin Akkad Daily video this morning, and you mentioned Napoleon, and he was talking about everything that's happening, and he was very, I don't want to say worried, but you know, he was warning everyone, all his viewers, of what's to come with censorship and how they're going to go full speed ahead at, you know, doing what they're going to do, mainstream media and big tech. We all know what they're going to do now. It's just going to be ramped up. But he said this is very much like the French Revolution. Yeah. And as he was speaking, as I was watching the video, he was saying, you know, I'm not going to get into it in this video because that's a large topic. It's a big topic. But he was very much saying what the Democrats are doing right now, what we're seeing unfold right now with the elitists and the globalists is very much exactly what happened during the French Revolution. Do you have any context to that? Do you see parallels with everything that's happening in the United States with the French Revolution?
Absolutely, and with every revolution, because what happens in revolutions, and you know, I want to make it very clear that I'm not calling for a revolution in the United States. I think that would be a bad thing. I want people to be able to organize and use the Constitution itself. But what happened in France was that the elite in France increasingly began to lose control, used the various instruments that it had in an increasingly repressive way. And at the same time, and this is the very bizarre thing, its internal court battles and intrigues multiplied. That's exactly the same thing happened in Russia. So if you look at the state of government in France in the run-up to the revolution, it becomes increasingly dysfunctional. You can't get things done anymore because there is constant intrigues going on all the time. And intrigue of that nature is not just a symptom of an elite losing control, it's of an elite that's become out of touch because they are no longer responding to the demands of their base and feeling in some way accountable to them. They're in it for what each of them can make. And that creates for extraordinary dissonance and disaffection at the center. And we're starting to see something like that happening in the United States also. An elite that's drawing away from its people, that's becoming more inward looking and enclosed, that's looking to the machinery of the state to protect them, and which is engaging increasingly in intrigues which are of no interest to the wider population, and on the contrary, reduce even further the wider population's confidence in it and trust in an elite, which has come to see, which the population comes to see as corrupt and out of touch and callous and self-seeking.
Right, I agree. You can burn down entire cities and shut down businesses and give people $600, but don't you dare, you know, enter the parliament or the state house, whatever people may want to call it.
Well, indeed,
in any country, I'm not saying U.S. In any country, that's the basic philosophy of the French Revolution and what's happening in the United States and everywhere. You can do all these things, but don't you dare enter, you know, where we conduct business.
Well, indeed, absolutely. But of course, that's ultimately what happens, not in the kind of, you know, disorganized way that happened a few days ago, which really was a token event. It was a symbolic thing, but in an actually very real event. I mean, if you're talking about the French Revolution, the seminal event in the French Revolution, the key event, the one that really meant that France was in revolution, was not, as many people think, the fall of the Bastille. It was when there was a march on Versailles led by the women of Paris, which Versailles being the political center, which forced the king and the court to leave. That was when France was in revolution, and it was clear that the king and the court had lost control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Good video.
Yeah.
Good video.
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought a lot during that video. I know maybe I'm tired. Anyway, guys, go to the Durant shop, guys. I got my new Durant stuff right here. Got a new hoodie. Took about 2.5 months to, because everything's closed in Cyprus. Everything is shut down. I finally got it. And I also have a Hungary shirt right here. So it's really nice. Alexander, it's just fantastic.
Oh, they are fantastic things in our shop. And of course, we have our amazing mugs. I'm keeping, because I'm obviously the United States is very much in my mind at the moment, but I always have now my default mug, which is Magic Mug, which is the one with the flag of the US. But you can find the flags of many countries on our mugs. And let me repeat again, they are the best mugs in the world. And you've got amazing shirts and T-shirts and sweatshirts and hoodies like the wonderful one that Alex is wearing now, which is, I've got a hoodie like that, by the way, and it is great. It's phenomenal.
This is Japan.
Japan, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. It's absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal hoodie. By the way, mine has the flag of England, and you've got hats. This one, of course, with the flag of Great Britain. I've got another flag, a hat with the flag of France, so you can find great merchandise in our shop. And Alex will I will remind you quickly, find us on our other platforms, BitChute, Rumble, Odyssey, and the rest, because obviously we need to be on those platforms too, especially in these difficult times. And you can also support us through Patreon, Subscribestar, and PayPal. And you can join us on our Discord server, and please come to our next program. You can find all the links below this video. And also, before I forget, look up Alex's channel and my channel also. Links below this video too.
Yeah, and just a quick note, guys. I know in the UK, real quick on a side, there are small delays in getting merchandise to people, especially in the UK, because of the lockdown in other countries. Like I said, Cyprus is just completely lockdown, so stuff takes a while. It does eventually get to you, the merchandise, but just keep that in mind, because you know certain countries have just locked down so hard that everything is just completely backed up. It's just be a little bit patient. It will come, and it is well worth the wait. Well,
absolutely, worth the wait. Absolutely.
So we apologize for that. It's just out of our control, because I'm getting some emails, and it's just out of our control, guys. We can't do anything about the countries that have been completely shut down.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but the merchandise is fantastic. It really is.
It absolutely is.
I'm completely stunned by how nice this stuff is. It really is. All right, guys, we'll leave it there. Alexander Kurz, take care.